start from the beginning. Cause even though I'd like to believe I came out swinging, it was more like a stumble, a trip, a fall through the floor and straight to a brick wall. And in this metaphor, my bones, well, they never properly finish healing. But I'm not trying to say my entire childhood was completely twisted and frayed. Support I said I would need, and I should be happy with what I got, but I'm not.
The music I grew up with was decidedly straight, white, male, and suburban. There are exceptions, of course, but the vast majority of skinny jeans were wrapped tightly around Caucasian legs. As I've grown up, this slew of similar faces grew more and more tiresome. Chicken is great, but no one wants chicken for every meal. Different types of music and different types of people making it were more and more appealing to me. And plus, how many songs do we need about that one girl that cheated on you? How many Reddit? How many? Enter Eric Garlington. Born all over the United States, both a transgressive punk and military brat, Garlington is black, queer, and plays pop punk in his band Proper. Eric's range of song topics is so refreshing that I lamented he only had one album the first time I talked to him. And then, blessed be Eric, Proper Surprise dropped their most recent record, I Spent the Winter Writing Songs About Getting Better, a record styled and named after the Wonder Years that talks about identity, sexuality, expectations, and moving to New York, where he has, for the first time, as he told me, black friends. Listening to these two records and my two interviews with him tracks an incredible progression from a stage-frightened kid deeply unhappy in the suburbs to a full-on pop-punk singer in New York, deeply proud of his identity and what it represents for kids like him. You'll hear me first talking to Eric about his first record, The Suburbs Have Ruined My Life, and then again about his second record, released by Big Scary Monsters, called I Spent the Winter Writing Songs About Getting Better. Proper's on tour all over these United States. You can check those out at likerealproper.com or on Twitter, Instagram, etc. Like Real Proper everywhere. The next Proper episode is coming very soon, and it covers Better Oblivion Community Center, the super duo Phoebe Bridgers and Connor Obrist. It's good, and it took me a long time because I couldn't stop researching cults. Okay. This is Proper.
Oh my God, I'm back on my bullshit. Who is staying happy? Was so hard, I just can't do it. Tried to fight two bouncers down in New Orleans. Spent too much time on Grindr, talking to some boys from Queens. Don't get me started. Call and say that you, it's me.
I can't be manly. So I'll just overcompensate with hypersexuality. Pick fights over little shit and call it integrity. So what I'm saying is,
What does proper mean to you? Or to your band?
Yeah, for all of us, really. Growing up, being, I don't know, like weirdos of color, everyone would always like, this was their line of thinking. They'd be like, oh, you talk like real proper, which they think is a compliment. With a lot of white people around, like non-black people. And then the next question is always, is one of your parents white? Like, because a black person can't be proper and well, speak well and articulate. So it just felt like we should take it back, and that we speak proper, but we can also be punk as hell, black as hell, as hell.
Nice. So I know right now, obviously, we have you, and you're the primary, in terms of at least songwriter, like lyric writer, right?
Yes.
I think.
Yes, that is true.
But can you just talk about who else is in your band?
Yeah, so it's me. I sing and play guitar and write songs. Then Natasha, she does bass, she sings. Eli plays drums, and we're starting to try to like peer pressure him into singing as well. But for now, we're three-piece, and yeah, guitar, bass, drums.
Sweet. So you have an album out right now. And this is your, I think, first official album?
Yes.
It's called The Suburbs Are Killing Me. Is that right?
Suburbs Have Ruined My Life.
The Suburbs Have Ruined My Life. Yes. I apologize. Couldn't find my notes for a second. I'll probably take that out to make myself look smarter. So,
yeah, no worries at all.
The suburbs have ruined my life. So I know that its history is sort of long and varied, but as much of or as little as an origin story that you want to tell about that record, I would love to hear it.
Okay, so my mom was in the Air Force for about 30 years, which I am just turned 28, so a long time. It's been the only thing that I've ever known. And it started out cool, like we were in Germany, Guam, Alaska. But then, like, I hit puberty, and they were just like, no, let's go to every shitty place in America. So I was in South Carolina. I was in Mississippi. I lived in Texas for, like, a month before. I was like, wow, this is not for me. I was on the Missouri border of Kansas, like, so close that the Westboro Baptist Church would show up to any fun thing I would ever try and go to. Great. So just my entire, like, first 25 years of life was just, like, is this all that life is? Is this all that America is? I don't know. And then we moved off of base when I was like 17, and I started to like figure myself out and learn that there was more to like 10 o'clock curfews and a one-stop store on the Air Force base and syndicated movies that came out 3 months later and were edited for family values. So it's just a lot of like being trapped in middle and Southern America.
Yeah. It's so interesting because you've probably lived in more places than most people, but it sounds like you had a very sort of either structured or sheltered kind of existence, even though you were in all these different places.
Yeah, so I would be like literally on different sides of the country, but it's an Air Force base. So that I don't know if you know, but there's a school on Air Force Base. There's their own grocery store, hospitals, doctors, like everything is in this little, it's literally a box with guarded gates.
Right.
So it's like the first, I think we moved off base when I was 16, 17. So, you know, a lot of my formative years were just sheltered, but all across the world thinking that, you know, the entire world is like America, which is not very fun.
Right. But when you were on base, like as a kid, could you not like go out, like could you go to shows, could you like date people that didn't live on the base, like how did that work?
No. it was so weird. Like I think it was at 10 a.m and like 3 p.m every day the American national anthem would start playing, and no matter what you're doing, where you were, you have to stop, find a flag, salute it, or just put your hand on your chest, and like if you didn't stop, people in their cars would be like, hey, son, what are you doing? You know what time it is.
Right.
So it'd be like that. And then obviously in Alaska, there's nothing. There's an Air Force base. And then like maybe 15 miles, there's the nearest city. So it's like I was in Alaska 12 to 16. So it's like but I only saw my girlfriend, you know, at school or when I was old enough, when I started sneaking out and going all to the other side of the Air Force base at 3 a.m. to go to her house. So it's like you couldn't really do anything unless your parents were okay with it and unless the Air Force base willed it to be so at the right time, at the right moment. It was so sheltered for still to this day, it seems unnecessarily so.
You went through all of this experience, and this experience is what is chronicled on this record.
Yes. Yeah. Growing up to the age, and then to the age of, I think I want to say 22 is this record.
On the first song, Curtains Up, it's a lot about performing. It's a lot about kind of performing these songs. Did you like back then, or do you now like have stage fright?
Oh God. So I've been playing guitar for like 16 years, but I've only been really performing for maybe 7 or 8. My stage fright was so terrible because I was, you know, I was the chubby, weird anime kid with a Jerry curl that was like lime green or cherry cola red.
Yeah.
And then all of my family was athletes. Like my dad was a boxer. My mom did track. My older brother is a wrestler. My younger brother's a football player. And then me.
Right.
Eating Pockies and trying to learn Japanese and playing trombone in the band for like 8 years.
Yeah.
So I was just like, this is it. I'm never going to be like, you know, sought after or in the spotlight. And then like, you know, I was just like, I actually like playing guitar. Why don't I just give it a shot? So then that was like 6 years of working that way up and just finally performing. And then ever since then, it's just been, all right, get the confidence. All right, play this song, get there. So it's just been me getting there to where like, I think within the last 2 years, I've really been comfortable being like, okay, I am a performer. I am an artist, not just some imposter that got lucky.
Yeah. It's sort of amazing to me that you were like an outsider in every single way. Like you grew up like black and white America. You grew up as a, you know, a punk on a military base, and you grew up as an artist in an athletic family.
Yeah, it's weird.
I'm glad that you are sharing your music with. I think a lot of people feel. I think a lot of people went through a version of what you went through, maybe a third of it. It's nice. The way you articulate it, I think, is so. Is so plain and kind of straight ahead in a way that I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
In Curtains Up, you say, you know, every band just looks out for themselves. I see the same three on each bill, so I'll just isolate myself from everyone. Kind of what has your experience been with the scene, especially as, a black person and as someone who didn't, you know, grow up with a traditional kind of upbringing that most scene kids did, which was like a, you know, middle class white family in the suburbs.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously in Alaska there were no shows to go to. I think Chiodos came. Do you know Chiodos?
Yeah.
So they had that song, "There's No Penguins in Alaska."
Yeah.
So they came to Alaska for that, like as a joke. But I was 13, so I couldn't do it. So. Right. 3 years later, moved to Mississippi, finally we're off base, so I finally start going to shows, and it's like 2006, so it's like, you know, Devil Wears Prada, scene music, AP Mag is like the big thing, skinny jeans, swooped haircuts, whatever. So I finally start going to shows, and for one, like, it's metalcore and scene kids, so it's already like a shitty male-driven thing where there's talking shit about their exes and like who they can fuck up in the pit.
Right.
So like, I start going to that, start joining bands, playing bass and stuff in bands. And it was just kind of like exactly what I was saying. Like, they're the cool kids. They're the three bands. Everyone goes to that one show. No supporting acts, no branching out. It's just a party every other month or so where the same three bands play. No one really gives a shit about the bands, though, because they just want to get fucked up, slam dance, and that would be it. And then I was like, okay, this will be better once I move to Kansas City, which happened in 2000 and – or Missouri in general, 2009, 2010. Yeah. And then it was like art school kids.
Right.
And the indie kids, like, you know, the Mumford & Sons kids that did EMT, though. So it's just like I moved from one shitty male-driven scene to another, which was like now drugs were involved.
Right.
So it was kind of just like – me and my acoustic guitar, and then like these 30-year-old dudes that are trying to fuck the 18-year-olds at the show.
Yeah.
Wailing about how lonely they are and how bad they want to be the next Jesse Lacey, and I was just like not with it.
Right.
So I had a whole folk punk phase that was not tight either. But it was just really a long time of trying to find where I belonged and it just being the same thing everywhere I went and being kind of dissatisfied with it.
So part of it must, like, in moving around and all these different places, a lot of it seems that you didn't have, or, you know, I don't know if anyone would have, like, close friendships or close friends. And can you just talk about and it turns out there aren't many perks of being a wallflower. It sort of continues that theme on not having close friends and the desire to create a lasting, meaningful relationship.
Yeah. So, my dad is a money chaser. He is always chasing the bag. So he wasn't even in the Air Force, but he like worked his way up from a dishwasher to becoming the club manager on the Air Force. I'm so proud of him. It's crazy. Yeah. But every 2 or 3 years though, he would get like a better offer, or he would seek out a better offer. So normally in the Air Force, like, you can be in a place between like 5, maybe even 10 years. But my dad was just like, oh, we got a better offer. Let's pack it up and go.
Gotcha.
So it would just be even harder. Like, even the places we lived twice, like, I lived in Mississippi twice, and it would be like 10 years apart. So these people didn't remember me. Mm-hmm. The last time I was like 6, I think. And I moved back at 16. So it's like, yeah, these people don't remember me. Oh, my old daycare, it's burnt down. My old, you know, friends, the Air Force base got renamed and everyone's moved since then. It's been a decade. So then finally, when I got to Missouri and I graduated high school and moved to Kansas City, I was like, all right, this has to be my home. This is where I belong. Not because I actually like believed it. I was just like, I get to make the choice now. So I lived there for 5 years and like the same thing. I was just like, damn, I've been here for longer than I've ever been anywhere else. But I still can't like find friends. I worked at Forever 21.
Yeah.
And they would just be like, all right, party at David's house, Ben's house, you know, like, we're meeting at the well, everyone get blackout drunk, and then no one talk about their actual life, just bitch about work. And it just became this cycle. And then I met the art school kids, and it was just this cycle of bitch about work, but also let's trip acid, which I'm not straight edge, but I don't really do drugs, so I was just like the sober guy in the corner that was just kind of awkward. So, yeah, and then I finally, just by chance, I think, my friends opened for Tiny Moving Parts right before this couch, or right after this couch came out. Mm-hmm. So there were maybe 15 people. Like, they played in a literal art closet with paintings hanging stacked up behind them. But it was like those 15 people were just like so into it. And some of them came from 4 hours, 5 hours away to see their friends, even though they were be in their town 2 days later. And I was just like, holy shit. For one, I'd never heard emo like that before. I'd never seen guitar playing like that before. For two, I was just like, man, is this what a show is supposed to be like? I don't have to open for someone big for my friends to show up. Like, this is amazing. So it just blew my mind.
That's really cool. That's a really cool experience.
Yeah.
You say in that same song, I accept that I'm that grain of sand along the beach, and there's no reason to be so terrified of the sea. I will let it take me. I think that's a beautiful, like, place to get to. And I was wondering, like, sort of, how often do you actually believe that for yourself? I can imagine that all of this, like, with your upbringing, it's, like, very difficult to just sort of be like, well, like, I'm a grain in the sand, you know, but it's the sea is going to wash me out just like everyone else, and that's fine.
Yeah. I guess I still have, like, my moments now where I'm just like, I'm lying to myself. It's never going to get better. But, like, now my bandmates are, like, my best friends. Like, I had that about like that Logan and Dakota relationship that I wanted so badly, and it just kind of fell into my lap. Like, I met them both by happenstance, and usually I would just try so hard and Craigslist ad after Craigslist ad and not work out or not want to fully commit. And when I just finally let go, it's just like, whatever, I'm going to meet some people and I'll worry about the band later. That's when I met my bandmates, who are now my best friends. So it's worked out, but there are still days where, you know, everyone has their down days where I'm like, do they really like me?
Right,
are we really
right.
friends? I'm like, yes, of course. We are. These are my near siblings. Like, they are the closest people I've ever had in my life.
That's
so
awesome.
I believe it a lot.
Yeah.
Like, when you don't try and force it, things sometimes just tend to work out.
Right. So switching up a little bit to the American Way, which this is like a handful of, or more than a handful, perhaps. The American Way, Not Black Enough, Red State Blues Part 1 and 2 are all sort of kind of socio-political songs, and which I think is awesome. I think this is something that never gets talked about, and I know Kevin Devine does some of this in a really smart way, but we like don't have a lot of this in this type of music, especially talking about it the way that you talk about it, which is from a personal experience. And so, yeah, and I mean, The American Way, I don't know when this was written. It's sad that, you know, it talks about the hypocrisy of men holding control over the rights to women's bodies. And with all the stuff that's happening in Alabama and Georgia this week, like, it felt like you could have written it yesterday.
Which is so sad.
Yeah,
that's so sad to think about. Yeah. I wrote it, like, in 2012. So during my folk punk phase, that was the one folk punk song that I was like, you know what, I'm going to keep this one. And, yeah, I'm glad that I did. But, yeah, it's really sad to think about how it's still relevant sometimes.
Yeah. Do you catch flack for these songs? I mean, I know that you must have been performing these in places might not agree with it. And, yeah, I was just wondering if people ever comment on this type of stuff to you.
Online, of course. Like, I've been using Reddit for, like, 10 years. So, yeah. Like, whenever I post my stuff on Reddit, obviously that the demographic of Reddit is not very diverse, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
So on Reddit, it'll be a lot of hateful DMs. Okay. On YouTube, it's hit or miss. But in person, even I've been on tour and played the song in Mississippi, in Georgia. I've played it in Kansas. And it's always been, well, thankfully, because, you know, I would always, since day one, I'm like, I want diverse bills. I want people like me on this show.
Yeah.
I don't want to open for a country band where they're all in their 40s and have trucker hats.
Yeah.
So luckily, just with like planning, I don't think anyone has ever accosted me in person. I think like I've got like, you know, lit majors that are just like, oh man, it's pretty like, it's pretty pretentious, but you know, I get what you're trying to say. But like, then after we talk it out, they're just like, okay, yeah, I have nothing to say.
Okay. Yeah. The way you put things, I think, is just so, it brings it so clear into focus. My favorite line is you say, because I wear old man glasses and my pants high watered, but these Southern gentlemen still believe I want to rob their houses and fuck their daughters. And like that's incredibly powerful. That's an incredibly powerful line. And to hear it as like a white person, you know, it's incredibly powerful. And I imagine to hear it as a person of color where these attitudes like still, you know, exist towards them, like incredibly powerful. So do you feel powerful singing those songs?
Now that we've started to, like, our fan base isn't huge, but it's starting to grow at a rate that I've never seen before, so it'll be the same thing, like people like me who have never felt like a threat or have never even felt manly, they'll just be like that, especially they'll be like that line, like, I know exactly what you mean. Like, I am like 4'1" and I have like a tie dye wig on, but like women still clutch their purse when I'm at the ATM. I'm like, yeah, like it sucks when you don't see yourself as a threat. And now you're just like, am I scary? What am I doing wrong? And especially when you're like in your 20s and you're having those thoughts, it can really be like really damaging to be like, I didn't know that I came off this way. And then you're like, this is my fault. How do I fix it? Instead of like, this is a systemic problem.
Yeah.
How do we go about addressing it?
Yeah. For not black enough, do you remember like what state of mind you were in when you wrote that or what you wanted to get across?
Yeah, fucking pissed. I went out to lunch with an old bandmate and, you know, he's supposed to get it, whatever. The old songs weren't like as sharp or like political, but he should have got it.
Sure.
And he made a comment. It's like, oh, you're not really black anyway. It's like, yo, we've been in a band together for like 6 months. Like, how do you not get this? So I had to, like, you know, talk to him about that without being weird and still want to go on playing music with him.
Yeah.
And then, like, I just got home and I was just like, this is never going to end. And I think I wrote the song in about 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I played it for my wife, I think. Well, my girlfriend at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And because I never really have doubts about songs, but that one I was just like, this is really on the nose.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people are going to be like, is this about me? And which actually is what happened. And she was like, no, keep it. This is a good song. You should absolutely keep it.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I did. But yeah, I was just fucking mad.
Yeah.
And that's how that song came about.
Hey man, we need to talk. And this time I'll try not yelling. Just don't appreciate remarks about how real black people are jive talking fatherless felons. Who the fuck are you to tell me I'm not black enough? Cause if I lost my cool in the eyes of the law, I'd be two shades too dark to trust. Being black isn't getting to say the N-word. Honestly, I prefer if no one said it at all. No, being black isn't wearing a free Chief Keef tall t-shirt waiting for your father or parole officer to call. No, that's not it. It's cool to say that shit. I never fucking asked you your opinion on Tyler Perry or interracial relationships or how you wanna fuck a black girl. Cause objectification some accomplishment or how easy I must have it. Cause what's in my pants must be really big. But being black isn't having a 12-inch dick. Although I've let that assumption get me laid more times than I care to admit. I'm being black isn't being a mad woman. Having the trick or gold dig to support hood rat kids, no, that's not it.
You know, you wrote this song in anger, obviously, but kind of what do you hope when you play this song, like, what do you hope people pick up on? There's a lot there, and and there's a lot kind of that you could take away from it, both, I think, you know, a song about you and your experience personally, as well as a larger implication. So, yeah, like, what do you hope people take away from it? Or do you not really think about that?
No, I do. I guess, like, now that I've been playing it for so long, like, we played our first shows in D.C. and Montreal, and people were singing the words, all the words, and to that song, like, someone started crying.
Yeah.
And so that's been happening more and more, where people, like, come up to me, and they're, like, teary-eyed, or like, hey, man, can I hug you? Like, this is my life. Mm. Or even white people, where they're just like, I had no idea. Like, I can think after I've been that guy, and I had no fucking clue.
Mm-hmm.
Like, asking me help for advice on how to go about apologizing, stuff like that. So even though I wrote it in a place of anger, I think because I took a step back and I decided to make some parts of it funny, that it wasn't just shaming people and it wasn't just like an angry, angry, angry song, that it actually comes off, people are really inspired by it. People, that's the one. It's like usually that one and Perks are what people hear from us than that listen to the rest of the record. So it's always just like, I wrote these in completely different headspaces and people are empathizing with it, or they're just like, yeah, I was mad about it, but like, I couldn't help but laugh at this line or that line, and it brought me back down from like the edge of anger. So it's just great to see. I guess I didn't expect that at all.
Yeah. In Red Snake Blues, 1 and 2, this is kind of your exit song, your plan for escape. And it's cool to see that it like came true. It'd be weird if we were talking and you were like still in Kansas City. In here you talk about, said, I decided to make a list of the things that make me angry, like the looks I get when people find out that I'm an atheist. I thought that changed when I'd moved from Mississippi. Can you talk about that move? Like what, the move from Mississippi, I assume to Kansas City or the Missouri area, and kind of what you, I don't know, it has to be some disappointment of like, I thought I was getting out of this type of thing and now I still get the same shit.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so full disclosure, I didn't know that the Bible Belt extended to Kansas, so that was my fault on that part. But after obviously being in Texas, Georgia, Alabama, Florida, Mississippi, South Carolina, I was just like, okay, the Bible Belt is the Bible Belt. I'm going to see what's up north. And I thought, you know, Kansas City was up north, which clearly not as much as I thought. But I was just like, okay, there'll be more people like me. Like, and I happened to meet my best friend in Kansas or in Missouri at my high school. He just happened to be atheist, like, and we didn't join by like some club or anything. And I was just like, oh shit, they're more open-minded people. But then like, it was just an anomaly. And I was like, okay, people still judge me. People, they're just like, but your parents are black. You should be this, or, you know, like, so it was just, it was a huge disappointment. Yeah. It was so disheartening to see. And then especially finally moving to Kansas City, the first metropolitan city I've been to as an adult ever. I think the population right now is like 600,000. So I was just like, okay, I'm in the city.
Right.
And like, people here are open-minded and they know. And then like within the first like 3 months, Westboro Baptist Church pulls up. And so it's just like,
it
was just like a whole thing where like slowly chipping away where I was like, man, I'm never going to find a place where I can be like, yeah, I'm not religious and people don't fucking look at me weird.
Right. It's like you finally got out of Alaska and then you like end up in Mississippi and you're like, all right, I'm getting out of Mississippi. And now like I'm in Missouri. It's like not too much better.
And that's why I learned that like Mississippi in the South, like, you know, they have problems with racism and xenophobia and not being open to other religions. But like I was in like the poorest city in the state.
Yeah.
Like I knew people that were 13 and they were on their second child. I knew people that were 20 that were still freshmen.
Right.
Like they didn't know any better about why they shouldn't be racist.
Right.
But then you move to Missouri, damn near on the border of Kansas, where these people are millionaires or they're tech bros, and you know a lot better. You had a blue, higher middle class upbringing.
Yeah.
Your parents are still together. You know who your mother or father was. Why are you still racist? Like, at least my friends back in Mississippi, because, you know, they would be like, I've never met a black person like you, which, you know, I took as an offense, but it's like, yeah, you haven't. You've never left the state of Mississippi.
Right, right.
I knew people that never left the city we were in. But then I go to Kansas City, and it's like, yo, we're in a metropolitan city. Why? How are you still racist? It's like, you should know better. But they just did. And that was the huge thing that really got me.
That's interesting. And so in that, in the second part of that song, The Solution, you talk about getting out. You say it's got to be on the ocean. One, I don't have to sneak in with a neighborhood I'd be proud to call my home. Clashing cultures, real diversity, a place where white people won't ask to touch my hair when it gets long.
Yeah.
Have you found that in New York City?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So obviously I'm never, ever, ever, ever going to afford to live in Manhattan. And I'd want to really anyway.
Yeah.
But we moved to Brooklyn. Then my wife and I got married a year ago.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. So we moved to Brooklyn. We found a scene. I think it was 2 years of just being alone and isolated and being ready to give up. And I posted on Reddit. So again, Reddit can be terrible. It's also great.
Yeah.
And one of my best friends now, Jackson, he was like, oh, that sucks that you can't find your scene. You should come to this show. So I went to the show, and then that's all of my friends that I know now for the last 3 years have been these same people. And this, we have a pretty great scene here of emo, DIY, indie, whatever.
Nice.
And like, you know, I found that place. The beach is like a 45-minute bike ride away.
Yeah.
I have the freedom to. I didn't realize, but like, the middle of America, everything is so far. But now I can drive an hour. I can drive 90 minutes. I'm in Philly. I can drive 3 hours, and you know, somewhere in Connecticut, four, and I'm in DC. Boston, whatever. So it's like touring is like a $5 megabus now for us if we really want to just hit the East Coast. So like all these new opportunities have opened up, all these new friends have opened up, and I finally feel like this is absolutely my home for sure.
That's amazing. That's so awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, I grew up in Austin, Texas, which is a little bit different than other parts of Texas, but it is still Texas is still really big. And I moved to New York for about 4 years after college, and that was like the biggest thing of like I could be in all these different states and like you know, like, and I was like, oh, now I get why everyone tours up here, because it's like really easy. It's like
so easy. You don't need a van for shit. You just get a $5 megabus coupon and you're good to go.
Exactly. Yeah. Like in Austin, it's like San Antonio, Houston, Dallas, Austin circuit is like hundreds and hundreds of miles. So
yeah, our drummer is from El Paso, and he went to school in Austin. So I went to Texas the first time as an adult, and we toured through his hometown and stuff. And I was like, man, Texas is fucking huge.
Yeah, it really is. Well, that's so cool. I'm so glad that you've like found that scene What other band? What are some other bands like in that scene in Brooklyn?
Okay. So, God, let me try and narrow it down. Because I'll just go on for days. I guess my favorite right now. Do you know Bay Faction?
No.
They were in Boston, and then they moved to Brooklyn.
Okay.
And they put out, like, a kind of R&B emo-infused record that was amazing about 3 years ago. And they just put out their second record, which is more, like, pop-influenced, like, mm-hmm. 3-4 months ago. And they're, like, I've been standing them so hard ever since. They're amazing. God, who else? So many people moved away. Who still lives here? Who hasn't moved? There's this great band called Bathe. Also, what I've been trying to do is, like, get out of DIY and emo in general. It's been the last 10 years of my life. So now I'm trying to be like, well, what is an R&B show like? What's a rap show like?
Right.
All of my suggestions now aren't really emo anymore. But Bathe is a great band. My friend Bartiz Cox is really good. He used to be in a band called Stay Inside, who is also really good. It's just so diverse. Like,
yeah,
we play
that's really
many
cool.
bands, so many different bills. We've had, like, rappers. We've had electronic people. Like, there's just, especially living here, you can have a different bill at a different venue every night. And it's just, like, it could be a Tuesday and it's packed. So it's just so diverse that I couldn't even begin to list a consistent amount of bands.
That's awesome. The last part of the last song on the album, and I know that this was written a while ago, you say, I hope I never have to write these songs again. I want to leave the Bible Belt and rub it in their face. I want to have some hope in the human race again. Do you have hope, Eric, in the human race right now?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So much more.
Great.
Obviously, everywhere you move, there are assholes and there are bad people and there are people that make it that shouldn't and that, like, don't give back to their community. Mm-hmm. But that being said, New York is where I belong. I'm so glad that I'm here. I'm so glad about the bands that I've met and been able to tour with and just get to meet or that have approached me or the people of shows that have come up and be like, hey, this really means something to me. So obviously, now that I've been here for a few years and I got my footing and I've been taking the band thing seriously, I feel so much better about it. We've gone, like, we've played in Paris and people drove 4 hours to see us and knew every word. They couldn't speak English that well. So I'd be like, oh, that was great. And just like, quoi? But, like, they know the words to the song. So it's just, like, it's really humbling and amazing to see that, like, I'm not alone. Yeah. That there are people that feel this way literally all over the world, all over this city, all over the country. And it's just, it's really great to see that other people are having that struggle and that now, like, because I'll get people all the time that'll be like, through Reddit, Twitter, whatever, be like, hey, I know this is your personal whatever, but is it okay if I hit you up? It's like, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So I've had so many been like fans move to New York and we just became really good friends
after the
fact. So really just been a great transformative last 2-3 years for me.
First off, I'd like to say I want to apologize for being so brash. Just need to get your attention. Maybe a little bit of cash to put my gas tank to last the road a few days. Just letting words speak louder than actions, which is how I was raised. Built to learn from my parents, got nothing nice to say, don't speak at all. But my favorite punk bands taught me to never take the fall. For every fuck up someone's bound to make. If you do, I want a hell of a song for every honest mistake. This is it, it's it for me. Spent my whole life under dull lights, cause that's where I want to be. It's a waste of time. How will I ever know if I don't try? And second, I'd like to say that this'll be a lot different than my first show. I'm streets ahead, the kid you knew writing shitty songs 5 years ago. Do it alone, don't you know that I should be expecting. Still blows my mind, see kids pay for a show and spend the time texting. The city news seems dead and that the crowd has died. There's always someone in the talking louder than I can even scream. They got something more important to say, or maybe we're wasting their time on stage. But if one person connects to just one thing I'd say, then that's enough for me, cause we're not just here to get paid. This is it, it's it for me.
Alright, so it's good to have you back, Eric Garlington of Proper, with a period at the end. And I'm glad you're back for round two.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, and you're back because after we talked, you announced that your new record was coming out, a tour was happening, and you had signed to Big Scary Monsters in the UK label, right?
Yes.
Nice.
All of that.
Yes. So I wanted to talk about the new record. It's called I Spent the Winter Writing Songs About Getting Better. But before we talk about the new record, let's talk about the Wonder Years, because that's a lyric copped from Came Out Swinging.
Yes, it is.
And so one of the Wonder Years records has Suburbia in the title. Your first record was The Suburbs Ruined My Life. So if you could just talk about kind of your relationship to the Wonder Years.
Oh, man. They're just like, I don't know. I don't remember how I heard about them. One day I heard a song and I was like, I need more of this.
Yeah.
I think it was right before The Upsides came out. And I was 21, 22. So yeah. Like, it was just, this is how I feel all the time. This is my life right in this moment. Someone has figured it out. They've unlocked the key. And I just kind of went back through all their old, like the 7-inches and old B-sides and stuff. The really first EP, I can't remember what it's called, but I just listened to everything, became a super fan.
Yeah.
And then The Suburbs came out and I saw them on tour and I was like, yeah, this is it. This is the band. But I don't know. They just solidify everything that I feel, except that they love The Suburbs. So I was just like, I feel like yin and yang there, where it's like, I'm going to talk shit on The Suburbs and then listen to this band I really love. Talk about how they want to die in the suburbs and end up there. And they came to terms with The Suburbs and all the shit that comes with it. And I just never did. So I was just like, every album has been influenced by some point by that band.
Yeah. And, at the end of your record, at the end of The Suburbs Ruined My Life, you had kind of, moved on from the suburbs and moved to New York, start sort of your life proper, so to speak. And and so this feels a lot like a reaction to your first record. Can you talk about how, this record, the new one, it starts with kind of the fade out from the end of the last record, and then it abruptly cuts off, and we have Curtains Down, which is the last song on the first record, is Curtains Up. Just talk to me kind of how you were writing and how the first record influenced the second.
I always had the idea of doing like songs about like my adolescence. Like back when I was like 16, I was going to name the first record Adolescence until I was like, that's a terrible name. But it's always just like, I always wanted to do before New York and after New York, or I guess I'm during New York right now, but it was just a conscious effort. I wrote Curtains Down like years ago, like back when I lived in Kansas City, and I was just like, I don't want to let this song go to waste. So I just changed all of the lyrics, or most of them for the most part, and just like kind of updated it. I was like, I really enjoyed playing the song. It used to be our set opener back when I was in Kansas City, and I'm just glad like it still, I think, meshes with the sound that we're going for now. But you can kind of tell it's like bridging the gap with the more just straightforward pop punk emo sound on the first record, and then the more experimental stuff we're trying to do on this record. But that's why I put the reprise in there, just to like show that it is a continuation of the same story and building upon those ideas and just seeing where I am now and me just having the capacity to not just be angry all the time.
This record, I think the conclusion you come to at the end is, you know, the last song is titled I Spent the Winter Writing Songs About Getting Better. And I think that throughout, although there's sort of shit talking, for lack of a better word, on certain subjects, you know, you kind of come out of it with a positive angle at the end and a hopeful angle at the end.
Yeah. Whereas the first record, it felt like it was just all negative. And then the one song at the end, maybe two songs, are just like, maybe I don't need to be this way.
Right.
And then this, I tried to like evenly have it be more positive, more hopeful, more. Because everyone was like, oh, I heard your first record. Like, you're really angry. I'm like, damn, that wasn't the point I was trying to go for. So trying to be more multifaceted this time around.
Gotcha. You talk a lot about the new record on sort of making it as a band or making music your career. What are your kind of broadest aspirations in that sense? I mean, do you feel that you have made it? Like, is there a point where you'll know, okay, like, check, we did it. This is what I wanted.
I guess, like, the end goal, like, the highest hopes, highest dreams would be, like, to be a mix of, like, the Killers and Tyler, the Creator.
Yeah.
Whereas the Killers were just, like, I don't know, when they first came out, I remember everyone just, like, talking so much shit on them, and then they dropped Sam's Town, and everyone's like, okay, maybe they can be it, and then they dropped Day and Age was their third record, mm-hmm. I think, and everyone's just like, wow, like, they are, like, the rock band right now, and, like, everyone at first was just, like, thinking they'd be, like, Panic at the Disco, where they had that one really popping album,
yeah,
and then either, like, do more pop stuff and sell out, so to speak, or just, like, kind of fade away, but they just keep doing it, and then Tyler, the Creator, just, like, his trajectory is just amazing. Do you listen to him at all?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so it seemed like, you know, going from, like, shooting his own videos in his basement and his backyard with this to, like, these high production videos where the cinematography is way better than it has any right to be, and, like, big name actors and, like, just a whole production for, like, a music video
and very thoughtful production kind of throughout really the whole thoughtful. Thing
really just like just really everything just amazing filmmaker.
Yeah.
Scoring movies and soundtracks and rapping and singing and playing instruments on this whole record. Like, just a mix of those two things are the goal. But now I'm happy where we are now. But obviously, I wouldn't say no to getting even farther. That is the end goal.
What were you, and maybe this is all part of it, but, like, what were you trying to say on this record that you feel like you hadn't said before? You talked a little about kind of, you know, the positive angle and not being as angry. But, what were you, what kind of new things did you want to bring to the table?
Just, I guess all the, like, the exploration of myself that I've done since moving to the city. Like, now I'll wear, like, a hot pink t-shirt and super, super short shorts and just not feel weird about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or just, like, being able to go on a date and just be myself and not have to be like, this person's probably a Republican and they're probably just fetishizing me. Or just being able to just, like, talk about being bi and being in an open relationship and going into the world and just being like, yeah, I'm in my late 20s, so I'm still figuring myself out and just trying to be okay with that. So it's always been a huge struggle. Or even just to feel manly, like, over the dumbest things, like wearing that pink shirt.
Right.
And people seeing my existence for back in the South.
Yeah. What did you used to wear when you lived in the South?
Oh my God. Well, for a while it was just, like, all black, you know, everyone goes through all black phase, whatever. But, like, I was just, like, really starting to get into fashion and dressing well. It wasn't even anything that wild. Just like, I guess I would just, like, Lil Wayne a bit, like how he would have, like, really bright red skinny jeans on and then just, like, a black shirt, like, nothing crazy, but, like, it was still so, like, only famous people were allowed to be that extravagant, to where I would just constantly be called into question, or just, like, like a pink t-shirt or a pink polo, even though that was, like a thing, but, like, I did it and it was kind of weird, I guess.
Yeah,
but just kind of simple stuff, but, like, bright colors was my thing back in the South. And then in Kansas City, got more into, like, I'm going to wear a three-piece suit to this party. And then people thought that was weird, which I guess it kind of was. But I looked good, damn it.
No,
I
man, people yeah, that's see. Cool. I'm all about it. So you talked about being bi and in an open relationship. And, you know, there's a few songs on here that kind of explore sexuality in a way that I don't think I've ever heard in pop punk. And I think, like, certainly not from a male perspective. I was just wondering, you know, kind of as much as you're comfortable, like, how do you identify and what do you hope people take from these songs?
I'm bi, I always have been. But what I hope people take from, I guess, is, like I was saying earlier, like, even though I'm 28, you can be 28, 38, 40, 18 and still figuring it out. Just that whole, like, American pressure where it's like, I need to know what I like, what I'm going to do, who I'm going to be with before you graduate high school. They want you to just figure out your life by the time you're, like, 20. And then when you don't know, it's just like, people be like, I don't have my shit together either, but it's fucked up that you don't. And it's kind of weird. So just just the whole, like, not even accepted. It's just like, it's okay to still be figuring it out. It's right. Okay to still be going on dates and not sure if you even, you know, comfortable with what you're, you know, what you're doing, who you're with, mm-hmm. but you still aren't sure what you like or what you're all about.
Yeah.
I worked way too hard for this. Told myself it's outgoing till I believed it. Asked friends to be my biggest critics. The motivation I needed not to quit.
On Bragging Rights, does one of your bandmates sing on that song? I know there's a female vocalist.
Willow from the Sonderbombs.
Oh, cool.
A really good band. Have you heard of them?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I don't need to explain them to you. Yeah, that's Willow. Fucking killed it. Really great job.
Really, that part's amazing on that song. I think it really adds to it a lot.
Yeah, thank you. She came in, because the original person had to back out.
Mm-hmm.
And she came in with a week's notice, wrote her part, recorded it, sent it back all within 6-7 days. It was amazing.
So good. Yeah. Yeah. I really like that. And I think, again, it adds sort of to your experimentation a little bit that you talked about, kind of less straightforward pop punk.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to be I have to oversee all of the lyrics if we're going to work together. I'm kind of hard to work with when it comes to when I have the idea.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just hey, do you want to be on it? And she was like, yeah, what do you want? It's like, just come up with something. And even her alone, she was like, oh, that's really cool. Just do what I want. I was like, yeah, just whatever you have, I'm sure it'll be great. And just having that confidence in people, really refreshing for both parties involved, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's more kind of rap where a guest artist will write a verse or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. That's literally the process I had in mind. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
In that song, you said there could be someone that looks just like me that needs to hear they're not alone, or at least they don't have to be. Might take years, it might not happen at all. Cut in with a midlife crisis in a bathroom stall. You can save every even if it's too big a risk. I've already heard it. I know that it's worth it. Can you talk about sort of the criticism you've already faced, or the people in your life that have told you, this isn't going to work?
Yeah, I don't know. Everyone, it's all sides. It's their family. It's their friends.
Mm-hmm.
Again, by 20, if you're not doing something, safe, it's just oh, you're still doing music? It's I graduated high school a year and a half ago. should I not get a fair shot?
Yeah.
Or, there's, black parents are just become a doctor or a nurse or something that makes a bunch of money. And then when you don't do that, it's just the end of the world. It's right. I failed you as a parent. You're going to waste your life. You're going to get on drugs somehow just because you didn't go to become a doctor. not that I could have become a doctor if I wanted to,
right.
But just like, you know, when you don't really do the safe route, everyone kind of wants to like reserve judgment until you start becoming successful. Mm-hmm. Even with my family, it was just like kind of crickets. And then it's like, oh, you're touring Europe. Oh, you're on TV. And then it's just like, oh, look at my son. So sorry, Mom. But yeah, it's just kind of one of those things, which I get it. It's such a hard thing to try. It's like, I'm going to be a big musician. And it's just like, okay. Saying that in Mississippi, like I did, because I was just so sure of myself. Everyone's like, okay, sure you are. We're in a town of 7,000. Let's see how that works out for you.
I don't know if you want to talk about the song or not, but there's a song called 11 White Sheep. And I kind of, when I heard it, I thought about, or maybe just White Sheep.
I have to take the 11 off.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Just White Sheep. And I compared it kind of to that one to your song on American Religion off of The Greatest Generation, where he says, sorry for what's in the magazines. I know it wasn't fair to me, but I'm spitting onto the pages like blood through broken teeth. Much as you want to talk about that song, which is seems to be about your family, if it's autobiographical.
They haven't even heard it yet. So the record comes out next Friday. And on about Wednesday, I'm going to be like, hey, here's this song. Mm-hmm. Well, here's the record. You're not going to like a lot of it, but I have to tell my truth. If you want to call me and talk about it, that's cool. If not, I'll see you for Christmas.
Are you worried about it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My family is a very, not awkward, but like uncomfortable, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like we never had sex talk. Mm-hmm. We never like, I think I've had like one major blowout with my older brother, mm-hmm. maybe two by now. And it's always just like, we just didn't talk for like 4 months. And it's just, instead of like talking it out, my family just does the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. Just like, I don't know, being an atheist, it was always like my mom would like post on my Facebook saying like, oh, Eric will come to God eventually. But she would never say that to my face. Oh, wow. So my family's just really reserved and like weird. I guess. It's just weird. But so, yeah, I'm really nervous. Obviously, since I've been successful moving to New York and not mm-hmm. failing and moving back home and like getting married and all these like things. Mm-hmm. One after the other, they've kind of loosened up, but yeah, I'm really nervous to hear it. I'm just nervous for it to be heard in general.
Yeah,
but you know, like it's one of those things. Like I wrote it, and I just like I couldn't not like it was done. I finished the song, and I was like, I can't not do it now.
Right. It needed to be said. It needed to be out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really. Yeah, I think it's really interesting and. I think a lot about kind of how people are affected by the art that we make. And it's interesting because I think there's there's a lot of people that are going to hear that song and say, like, thank you. Like, I have been feeling this way. I haven't found a way to express it. You know, and then, of course, like, there's your family and they might, and you know, take it differently, obviously, so.
I mean, I'm ready for it. Yeah. I mean, we're back in like December, so I've had all this time to to get ready for it. But yeah, I'm sure because that's the one where we've shown to like a couple friends or mm-hmm. like people, like publications that we're trying to work with. And that's one of the highlights that they always talk about, mm-hmm. like them. So I think it'll go over pretty well. I'm pretty hopeful.
Cool. Yeah, I think as I keep listening to your stuff, you know, just you speaking about your experience, like something as simple as you speaking about experiences, you're not trying to speak for anyone else. You're not trying to speak for, you know, a movement or anything like that. Just you speaking to your experience is so specifically is so relatable, I think, to me, certainly, but to a lot of people. And I think that's really cool. And I think that's the sort of thing that we need, like in pop punk, and why I really want people from different, you know, backgrounds to be writing music and singing songs. Cause I think that, you know, we've heard a very, thin slice of American life. We've heard about that side, you know, 1200 times. And so,
That was also a concern. Cause like one of the criticisms from the first record was just,
or I mean criticism, but it's like dudes on Reddit. It's like, why did I post it? Of course, this is how it would go. One of the criticisms just like, I can't relate to this, or like, what has someone said? It's too political. It's like, what do you? That's just my life. I'm not nothing political. It's my besides the American way, which is very political. I don't think there's much of a political lean. Like, obviously, it's very all very liberal, but it's just telling you, like, and then this happened when I was 10, and then this happened, and nothing just like, vote Biden or any weird shit like that. It's just, so, like, I was really concerned, especially going, like, way more into, like, the pro-blackness and queerness on this record.
Yeah.
But it seems so far that it's, people are jiving with it, it's going all right.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting that people are like, oh, like, I can't relate. And it's kind of like, well, like, now you know how... like a ton of other people have felt for like 20 years of pop culture. It's like, oh, I can't relate to this. Like white kid in the suburbs thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What was that?
On the first record, you talked about the N word a little bit and how you wish that no one would say it at all. On this record, you redact that. And you say, because fuck that. You don't talk about that if you don't want to, but just in general, like, what do you feel like you've learned? How have you grown from the last record to this one?
Well, for one, my best friends are black for the first time in my entire life.
Yeah.
So my bandmates are my best friends. And just like, you know, because Eli's from Texas. Natasha has been in, Delaware, Chicago, London. She's just been, she's like me. She's lived everywhere, which... Yeah. For one, that's, like, new to me. I'd never meet other people like that. For two, like, to see a black person that knows what that's about. So for one, like that, just getting black friends and finally moving to New York where it's, like, I'm not the only black person. Like, I don't have to see a white person if I really don't want to living here. And just, like, finally just – I don't know. Not, like, finally getting it, but just, like, feeling comfortable to be myself. Because both of my bandmates, like, they both had the whole problem where everyone's like, oh, you speak white, you know, tell them they talk white when they were growing up. And just – being able to share that experience with someone and traveling the world with them and going back on tour to Texas and seeing how Eli lived. It's obviously in Mississippi and I went to Dallas once 10 years ago. I was like, oh, fuck the South. The South is fucking terrible. And just seeing how much fucking love that man has for Texas.
Yeah.
And just seeing
which
that side
of Texas
it.
Not, is he from?
He's from El Paso. So right on the border.
Yeah.
But yeah, his whole life. So, you know, he knows everything.
Yeah.
Juarez, Dallas, Houston, Austin. So just like seeing that new perspective and not just someone being like one of my white friends that's just like, oh, I lived in like the suburbs of Texas. I know about the culture and then like realized it. Just that. Just growing. I wrote Not Black Enough when I was 22, I think. I wrote when I was 22, kind of shelved for a while and then put it on this record. And just wanting people to know that like, hey, I'm not 22 anymore and I don't have any ounce of state whatsoever. This is where I am. Don't ask me about that song saying if I still feel that way, because people did that all the time for their interviews for the first record. So just wanted to show the progress that you can change at any age.
Yeah. Well, I've gotten a chance to listen to the record numerous times, and it's fantastic.
Thank you.
I love it. I think it's a great, like you said, like a real evolution as you kind of hone your sound. It sounds like you guys, you know, I mean, I don't think anybody is making music like you and your bandmates are. And that's really exciting. So, where can people, it'll definitely be streaming when this come out. Where can people buy the record?
It should be on like the usual platforms.
Okay.
iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music. I think it'll be on Tidal too, just everywhere.
Okay.
And then like... The last record, we'll have it for sale on our website. And then also now our label will have it on their site. So we'll have some bundles, shirts, cassettes, CDs, all that kind of stuff. So just anywhere that music is sold, you can find it.
Sweet. And you're at like Real Proper on Twitter?
Yeah, Twitter. I think on everything. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Now YouTube, you have to get a certain amount of followers before you can change your URL, but when you do, it will be like Real Proper everywhere. Gotcha. Like realproper.com.
And your Instagram is sweet because you do have a really nice sense of fashion, and I'm often jealous of your outfits, so I would recommend your Instagram to anyone who wants to see what actually looking cool looks like.
Thank you.
I haven't figured it out yet.
We just got a camera, so we're about to try and post more of our ridiculous fits.
That's awesome. Well, Eric, thank you so much for taking the time. Congratulations on the new record. Congratulations on getting signed. I'm super excited. I think people are going to really dig it.
Thank you for having me again. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Great. That was my two interviews with Eric Garlington of Proper. Thanks to him again. Again, Jeggeds are fantastic. They've gotten shouted out by Dan Campbell of the Wonder Years, Kelly from Camp Cope, and Warriors, among many others. Definitely check it out. I'll be back actually pretty soon with a full episode, Better Oblivion Community Center. Okay, that's it. You can follow me on Twitter at David Callison. It's KALLISON. And take care of yourself. Love each other. And fucking listen to Proper, because they're fantastic. So do that. All right.